welcome to a new episode of The Cusp Show, the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Tom Richardson, along with my co-host, Joe Favorito. Welcome, Joe.
Hello, Tom. Good to see you again.
Good to be back together doing another show. Really excited about today's show. We've got a startup in the house. And Joe and I were just talking about the fact that we have yet to cover a startup. We've had some monolithic companies like IBM
and Twitch
and Turner Sports and things like that, but this is the first time we've had a startup. And in light of what's been going on in the sports business with the disruption on the media side, particularly in sports journalism, we're really pleased to have Kim Donaldson, who is the co-founder and CEO of Excel Sports, which is a new female-focused sports media initiative, or I should say company, just launched a couple months ago. So welcome, Kim.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, excellent to have you. So we'll try to cover different aspects of what you're working on with Excel and how it relates to what's going on with the changing face of sports journalism today. But let's get to know you a little bit. You have a kind of a diverse background, an interesting background that somehow led you here to be a co-founder of a new business just in the midst of severe disruption in media. So yes. It's an interesting challenge. So tell us about how you got here.
Let's see. Long story short, I grew up in, I'm one of those odd people who grew up in New York City. And for better or for worse, was an athlete, a jock, ever since I can remember. I grew up going to Rangers games. My dad was a hockey player from Buffalo, New York, and had us practically when we could walk going to Rangers games. My mom was an athlete, a tennis player. Sports was always a big part of my identity. But I also grew up in a house my dad was a major entrepreneur and spent my life starting little businesses. I was always trying to sell something to their guests.
Okay.
At one point my mother caught me with a table out on the street in New York City trying to sell my old toys, and that she closed that down very quickly. But I thought it was a good business idea. Ended up starting my own company. Branding, marketing, graphic design, which I ran for 10 years with a really diverse range of clients, everything from nonprofit to fashion to finance to you name it. And then had the opportunity through a woman I'd met along the way to start a company called Bottlenotes, and that was about 11 years ago, and it was a niche media company. And we focused on wine and on younger people who wanted to learn about wine. And we took technology, which at the time was very new, things like matching technology, using algorithms, ordering wine online.
So like recommendation engines?
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now they'd be called recommendation engines.
Right. We didn't know that phrase then. Yeah.
Exactly. We were selling wine online. We had wine clubs based on your, personal profiles and big events, and a lot of it was ahead of its time, unfortunately, which is often the problem with startups. You can be too late to get in the game, but equally as bad as when you're too early and people aren't ready, and people really weren't ready to order wine online yet, and they didn't trust sort of the recommendation engine, which we now all take for granted today. And we did that for 10 years, and I like wine. I certainly like to drink wine, but I'm not as passionate about it as a lot of people in this world. And I sort of missed having something that I was really, really passionate about, so I started to look for something new to do, and I like starting things. And a friend of mine who I played squash with all through high school and through Yale, said to me, well, in my mind, the thing you're most passionate about is sports. You've played them, played all through the juniors. You were ranked junior. You played in college. You were national champion team. You played after college. You had Knicks season tickets in the 90s. You still have Rangers season tickets. You'll even go to Knicks games alone. She said, how about sports? And it was funny because it hadn't occurred to me. It hadn't occurred to me that I could work in sports. And I guess because I saw sports as sort of a fun thing and a hobby and a passion.
Right.
But also as a woman, I think it didn't occur to me that I could work in sports unless I was a professional athlete.
But were you a sports media aficionado? Like, were you a Sports Illustrated reader back in the day?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. I've read everything.
So you were paying attention to what was going on.
Sports Illustrated, when Sports Illustrated for Women came out, I was one of the people who actually went to the newsstand and bought it, because, yes, it was paper. I followed sports all my life. And so I started looking online. I said there would have to be a lot of people covering women's sports, and that's what I'd be interested in doing if I did that. And I looked, and there really weren't, and I was shocked. I had never heard of ESPNW, which may sound amazing, and was amazing to me, given that I have every sports app out there, from Bleacher Report to NHL to, you know, you name it. Team stream, everything.
So you were literally not aware that there was this whole big initiative called ESPNW.
There was ESPNW.
Wow.
Okay. And I went on ESPNW and saw it was primarily basketball. It was, when I started looking in the beginning, it was basketball, it was Ronda Rousey, it was, I think, a few things about Serena Williams and maybe Maria Sharapova. But that was sort of it. None of the other sports that, you know, you can call small sports, but in fact are pretty huge.
Right, in the things, aggregate, right?
Yeah, in the aggregate, things like volleyball. And then in April of last year, the example I use the most often is there was a week when the United States women's ice hockey team won the world championships. And that's a big deal. I mean, you know, it wasn't Canada, it wasn't Russia, it wasn't Sweden, it was the U.S. women. And ESPNW did not mention it that whole week, nothing. And then the same week, Mikaela Shiffrin had won some big championship race in Europe that was a big deal in skiing, and no mention of that. ESPNW is still focusing on women's basketball, sort of Ronda Rousey esque stuff, a little tennis, maybe golf now and then. And then actually that week, a couple of the big stories they focused on were the NFL players who were abusing their girlfriends. And this is on a women's sports channel, so I just didn't get it. And I looked out there, and there were a few other sort of mom and pop sites that are wonderful and full of love for basketball or whatever they're focused on, but not sort of bigger scale and very focused. But so if you want to cover, if you want to follow softball, skiing, and lacrosse, you really have to go to USA Softball. You have to go to Inside Lacrosse or USA Lacrosse. You have to go to USA Skiing. You have to go all over, because no one is doing it in one place. No one's saying what's happened year-round either. I got really excited that maybe I had actually found something that didn't exist and that I really believed the world needed. And the time was right for it, given social media, given the digital opportunities that did not exist even 10 years ago. And I started reaching out through LinkedIn. I'm a big LinkedIn fan. Mm-hmm. I think it's the James Bond lover in me. I like to see if I can figure out who's who and how to get to who. And so I started reaching out to athletes, coaches, and sort of the top marketing people in sports at Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, you name it. Just reaching out. People at the governing bodies, just reaching out. And the only thing in my description on LinkedIn was focusing on a project dedicated to girls and women's sports. That was it. Nothing more.
What was the ask, though, when you reached out?
To connect.
Oh, just to connect. Oh, I'm sorry.
But, okay. I mean, you know, in a lot of these cases, Olympic athletes, coaches, top people at, you know, Nike, it would have absolutely
who's
no
Kim
reason.
Donaldson?
Who's Kim Donaldson? She works for a wine company, you know, ding.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. Within a month, I had 20 Olympic athletes accepted my connections, a ton of other athletes, coaches, college coaches, high school coaches, top marketing people at all these different companies, U.S. governing body people, and that is what finally made me get going on XL Sports, and it's been going great guns since then.
So what were the steps you took to turn those the positive feedback you got from the LinkedIn connections into what became Excel Sports in terms of the decision making and the partnering to get to the point where you're going to go for it as an entrepreneur?
The first thing I did was sit down and figure out what the possible revenue streams would be.
It's a good move. Right.
I didn't get raised by an investment banker for nothing. So I figured out, you know, where could we actually be a company that would be not only self-sustaining, but would actually be able to make money for investors and really become a part of the business and sports and cultural landscape. I didn't just want to be another little startup, and I certainly didn't just want to be a nice, good effort for women's sports,
right, like
which
you know,
so often women are sort of put into that pigeonhole of being not a charity organization, but a sort of do-good.
Right.
But I want Excel to be sort of the Bleacher Report for women. And it's Bleacher Report, you know, we can talk more about what media I love and what our influences are, but I wanted it to be a proper company. So I looked at the models of a Bleacher Report, of an ESPN, of other companies. Obviously, we don't have the television component, nor do we want to for a good while, if ever. But I wanted to be realistic about what would be money-making directions. And what I came up with was the focus would be the content. That is the main product. It's news, it's features, it's profiles, interviews, video, podcasts, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Everything about women's sports, and not just about three or four sports, about all women's sports. And obviously we're focusing a little more in the beginning on the bigger sports, but we've covered fencing, we've covered water polo, we do a lot of swimming, gymnastics, lacrosse, softball, we've done judo, we even had one of our associate editors go out and try out for the New York football team, and not soccer football, just to do a deep story on these
That's
women
great.
Who play football. Well, the tricky thing was she actually made the team. So she had to then say,
okay,
thank you, but I'd really rather be writing than being tackled.
Right.
So she did not join it, but she got a great story out of it. So the content is really everything we're focused on.
So I want to play devil's advocate for
you.
Okay. Condé Nast Sports for Women, SI for Women. Having worked in the WTA, having worked with women's rugby, having worked with the AVP, in theory, it seems like the audience is there. But if it hasn't been proven to this point, why do you think this will work? And why is the time now for it to work?
My answer, and it may answer different parts of your question at different points, but to me, the main difference is the timing. Sports Illustrated for Women was a fabulous idea. As I said, I went out and bought the magazine. Mm-hmm. Couldn't wait. The problem was it was print. So by the time you got it, it wasn't news anymore.
Right.
It was print, so it could only be X number of pages. So you were only telling so many stories in that magazine.
Right, that was the number of pages being dictated by the number of ads you could
exactly.
sell. So it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Ads weren't there because sports, as you guys know much better than I do, is so driven by eyeballs, and it is so about who's watching it on TV and the numbers, and so of course it's never been there for the women. It's never had an opportunity to be there for the women. So it's not that it's that part of it has failed. It's never really been tried in the right way, and I think part of that is because women's sports were not as huge as they are now. I mean, they've been growing exponentially in the last 10 years.
To participate, correct.
Participate.
But not on the professional level, per se, if you judge it by ratings or advertisers, you know. But you're not really talking about a daily coverage of the WNBA. I mean, there will be parts of that, but it's really telling the stories behind all those pieces.
No, we're
correct?
Covering news, too.
Okay.
I mean, we're not going to be beat reporters. We're not going to be doing play-by-play.
Right.
But we are covering daily news. What happened last night, what's happening this weekend, so it will be news. I think that the biggest difference is that we have both social media and digital. The ability to send out an email and let people have the option of getting an email every day or once a week or whatever they want with a sort of morning warm-up is not something that Sports Illustrated had at that time. The social aspect is, you know, indescribable in terms of the number of people who you can reach very quickly with a viral story, with friends telling friends. Obviously, marketing and advertising through social is huge as well. A couple other aspects to think about are that the companies who have tried women's sports in the past are large corporations. So, for instance, an ESPNW, Laura Gentile, amazing idea, absolutely should be done, needed to be done, but because they're owned by Disney and because ESPN, even unto itself, is a large corporation, it's about the numbers. So if you can't generate large numbers quickly, you're going to get cut. You're going to get pushed to the side. And that's what happened to ESPNW. I mean, most of their editors, even managing editors, are part-time. They pay people 29 hours a week, so it's not benefits. It's really a part-time thing. And that's what women's sports has been relegated to over there, because from a corporate perspective, it's not going to generate the cash that they need immediately. We don't have that problem.
And is the focus, we live in a global environment now, is the focus primarily American sports right now?
For now, it is focused on the U.S. market, because we know, and I know from past experiences, that if you don't really focus in the beginning of a startup, you're doomed. So we really are focusing on the U.S. We're building a network of freelance writers within the U.S. That being said, we absolutely want to cover women's sports around the world as we grow. And already we've been connecting with organizations, women's sports organizations in Scandinavia and England and India. We have readers from yesterday. We looked at the countries and it was everywhere from Dubai to Australia to Ireland to India, China. I mean, so the athletes are out there, and the people who like watching them are out there. It's a question of growing at the right pace so we don't get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, that's the way I was looking at it, Joe, that the idea of looking at the long tail of content creators in women's sports and figuring out a way to bring much of it, or some of it at least, together in an efficient manner has never really been tried, I don't believe. So I think Kim's right. ESPN obviously had a bigger agenda, a bigger master to serve, right? SI had a bigger master to serve. And if you're coming at this fresh...
Condé Nast is
another. Condé Nast is another great example. So if you're coming at this fresh and you can figure out a way to tap into that long tail, bring it together, because all those individual athletes and markets are very much underserved because they're kind of toiling in isolation,
yeah,
you know, as small players in the sports landscape. And but together, it could be more powerful.
Yep, and if you go back to the revenue question, right now advertisers in the U.S. are dying to get to these girls and women, 13 to 34, 45, and it is very hard to reach them in a way, particularly on social and digitally, in a place that they trust, where they're actually going to read the and advertise. You know, digital advertising, as we see it nowadays, is more about native content. It's not banner ads. It's not the old stuff. It's intelligence from Nike, and it's, why are the treads on your sneakers shaped the way they are? Like, why actually the engineer at Nike can tell you why that is, the science behind it. I mean, cool stuff like that, that is Nike showing how ahead of the game they are, but is also interesting to readers. And, I mean, you know, women spend 80% of the money on that athletic wear and 85% of spending overall. So whether it's advertisers that have to do with sportswear, equipment, travel, food, nutrition, you know, you name it, the women are buying the products. So every young woman and every mother who's on XL is a good target.
So, talking about scale, have you had advertisers already come to you and say, if you get to X point, we would be interested in you?
Yes.
And do they tell you what that X point is? And is that X point attainable, like Tom said, for a longer run, or is it a shorter run? And the reason I ask that is because there's an interesting story that came up at the Super Bowl with Microsoft, where the NFL went to them and said, we want to do all this innovative stuff. And they said, well, we just bought into you because we really want to sell laptops. And that's evolved over time, but...
For surfaces. Right.
That's right. Surfaces, not laptops. But
just get called iPads on TV.
Right. By Drew Brees, as a matter of fact. But how do you... So at some point, do you stick them in a back pocket and say, okay, when we get there, we'll call you back? Or do you come to them and say, we can do this for you right now. Will you be willing to take a chance on us?
The latter. We launched 6 weeks ago. So we had to launch.
Right.
The site had to be
so
up.
Don't get too excited.
We
that
had
helps.
To actually have people looking at the site and have a plan. But we have a few companies that want to work with us as a launch partner, where we give them full credit as being part of why we have been able to launch. Mm-hmm. Supporting women's sports, being there from the beginning. And then we're also finding partners that don't necessarily have marketing budgets, particularly sports equipment companies, for instance, and smaller, whether it's health or beauty or whatnot, companies that are interested in being partners if they have, let's say, a huge social audience or a very big email list. We're doing partnerships with companies, sort of to make friends early and build a stable of advertisers.
And you've reached out and done deals with a fairly large number of female athletes, correct? Could you talk about some of those?
Because
you've got a lot of great people involved, it sounds like.
Sure, we do. We have an athletes council and a coaches council. And our athletes council has some fabulous women on it. We have Team USA athletes from everything from field hockey to we have a NASCAR driver. We have
not the one we're thinking of, though. I don't think
not
the one who crashes all the time. We won't go into
that.
So, anyway.
We have probably the best known name would be Michelle Wee, the golfer.
Right.
And that's a funny story, actually. That is months and months and months ago. I got a message through LinkedIn from a girl saying, I'm a college golfer, and I have to have an internship over the summer because I play tournaments, and I can't graduate till December. Can I be your intern? I said, oh, sounds good, whatever. And I told my...
For Excel, she was asking.
For Excel, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this was back in, October.
So you were very flattering.
very flattering, very organized young woman. And I mentioned to my... co-founder that this young woman named Hallie Ledbetter had contacted me through email, and she wanted to be an intern. And my co-founder's eyes went wide, and she said, Ledbetter? And I said, yeah, funny name, right? She said, do you know who Ledbetter is? Now, I am not a golfer. I will admit I tend to like faster sports, but I do. I will watch some golf. So she went on to explain to me that, in fact, David Ledbetter is one of the world-renowned coaches and blah, blah, blah. And to his daughter's credit, she did not mention that in a whole phone call with her.
So it was his daughter.
It's his daughter.
Oh, my God.
And she's a golfer at Rollins. And so I said, hey, come on up. Yeah, we'd love to have you. And then we got talking again because she was eager to help us sort of even before, and she said, well, you talk about telling stories of athletes, and I'm friends with Michelle Wee because my dad coaches her, and she gets on camera and she has a whole different persona, but if you go to her house, she's this amazing artist and she's an incredible person, and it would be so great to tell the story of athletes like Michelle Wee in a better, deeper sort of athlete interviewing athlete way. And I said, well, that sounds fabulous. And so, sure enough, Hallie interviewed Michelle. They sort of collaborated on what the interview would be and did it at her house. And then we asked, or we asked Hallie to ask Michelle to be on the Athletes Council, and she said yes. Tweeted it out to her 200,000 Twitter followers.
So we're getting a little bit short on time, but I did have one question. As Tom and I are both fathers, and you've mentioned a lot of women, and you've talked about engaging men. Do you have any men, and would you cover fathers' stories as well? Is that in the mix? And if it's not, why wouldn't it be?
I got you there, because yes, it is.
Good. There you go.
Amazingly, when we got going on social, right in the beginning, our Facebook audience was more than 50% men.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of joked around that, you know, maybe it was pictures of Kim Vandenberg, our Olympic swimmer, who happens to be a very beautiful woman. And everyone said, ah, that's very sexist. You shouldn't say that. But we still have our Facebook audience is about 40% men. And we know now that it is a combination of fathers of girl athletes, of men whose wives or girlfriends play sports, or they just like watching women's sports. So men are definitely part of the audience, and we are going to talk about men. There are certainly a lot of male coaches of women's teams,
mm-hmm.
And so we will have men on the Coaches Council.
Great.
And then we're doing a number of series, and one of them is, we're calling it Generations for now, but we're debating whether it is still going to be called Generations over time, but the idea is where, let's say, a father or mother has been a professional athlete, and now the daughter is a professional athlete, even if it's a different sport. It's also siblings. Steph Curry, mm-hmm. for instance, has a sister who's an amazing NCAA volleyball player, and his mother was an amazing NCAA volleyball player. We had Kevin Durant give a quote specifically for us, for our writer Howard Magdal, on Brianna Stewart, who he has tremendous respect for, and Howard was writing about Brianna Stewart, interviewing her, and the quote from Kevin was in there. So we're going to incorporate men in a lot of different ways, and some we're going to have sports medicine and whatnot experts, and some of those will be men. I mean, we are absolutely not an all-girls club, you know, no boys allowed at all. We want it to be the bigger, broader community of women's sports, but not just women.
Kim, when you look at the growing success of direct athlete-driven media, like Jeter's Players Tribune and Uninterrupted that LeBron James is involved with Mav Carter, now this J.J. Redick
sliced
a new social thing with Curry and his college roommate, mm-hmm. is that something you're thinking about as part of the agenda? And are your partners, your athlete partners, excited about that prospect?
Yes, that absolutely is. We love the Players Tribune. I mean, I think we all read it religiously, and we're particularly excited when there's a woman, like recently with Candace Wiggins retiring. That was a really good piece. Carolyn Wozniacki's written. There have been some wonderful pieces about women on, or by women on there. We love the idea of athletes writing their own stories, and we've done that already with swimming a little bit with Kim Vandenberg, and we are going to be doing more and more of that. We also are going to be having athletes interviewing athletes. So Kim Vandenberg interviewing Katie Ledecky, or it could be different sports. For instance, our NASCAR driver on our Athletes Council, Drea Landauer, was best friends or roommates with one of the girls who just made the Olympic sailing team. So she's going to do an interview with her, so that's, you know, auto racing to sailing. You don't get much further away.
Right.
It's a lot of fun, the athletes telling their own stories and asking questions that really are different than your sort of straight press news questions.
I want to ask you to tell our audience about where we can find Excel Sports. Give us everything you got when it comes to discovery.
All right. So Excel Sports, in order to find us, you may have to spell it differently than a computer would like. So we are EXCELLE Sports. And it's excelsports.com. Our Twitter handle is @excelsports. Facebook just type in XL Sports. We are all over social. We have a email starting this week that will start once a week, and you can sign up for that on our site. And so please tell your friends, tell everyone.
Well, I want to say that we're pulling for you here at Columbia, because I think this is a piece of the sports media landscape that has been missing. And I agree with you that the time feels right now. And for those of us who have grown up in the media business, like Joe and I, seeing good efforts made by Sports Illustrated, by Condé Nast, etc., just kind of ultimately get stymied for different market reasons and cultural reasons. It feels like you got a really good vision on how to actually overcome that challenge and build something really important in this business.
Thank you.
So, Kim Donaldson, thank you very much for joining us. Everybody check out XL Sports. You'll be hearing a lot about them over time, I hope. And we'll see you next time. Come back maybe later on when you've made some more progress and you can update us.
I will. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Cusp Show. That's the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Tom Richardson. My co-host is Joe Favorito. And our production assistant this week is Columbia student James Appel. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple's podcast app, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and on other key platforms. You can also see it at blogtalkradio.com/The Cusp Show. And you can get in touch with us on Twitter at CUSportsBiz, that's B-I-Z. Also, you can find out more about our program, the Columbia University Sports Management Program, by going online at sps.columbia.edu/sports-management. Thank you.